Hi, thanks for joining us. I'm Angel, and this is Conversations with the Community. I'm here with Christian for Gears for Life, and we're here to talk about suicide awareness and where we fit in that as a community. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm good. I didn't know I was a member of the community until you just said that.
Yeah? You know, you're a member of a community.
Ah, okay.
You know, your own community. Even like if it's a community in your own house, just on your own laptop by yourself, that's your own community.
It's a pretty big title. I don't know if I can shoulder that weight.
No? Well, that's why you can shoulder it with everybody in the community. that's the whole point, man. Don't shoulder it. Shoulder it on all of us.
Okay. I'll give you some then.
Yeah. So you're here with Gears for Life.
Yeah.
How long has the organization been around?
Oh, man. Probably a year and a half.
Yeah?
But to be fair, I haven't worked on it in a year. So if you look at my website, it's like the same from last year. Mostly because we're not a big organization. I do everything myself.
Right.
And depending on my life situation, if I'm working really hard on something else or I'm just busy at the time, it's hard for me to really update it. Plus, I got really discouraged last year just with a lot of different things I was dealing with in the suicide prevention awareness community. So I kind of just was like, I don't know if I really want to do this, but...
You had to take some time for your own self-care?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right on.
Dude, you know the words.
Yeah, self-care, like, man.
Oh, man.
I love self-care. You got to, take a bath bomb and just be like, I don't care.
That's a stretch, but...
What? You don't do bath bombs?
I don't have a bath.
Oh, well, then just, rent a room for one night and go to Lush and then get a bath bomb and, you'll understand.
I've been to Lush once.
Did you like it?
I went there to buy something for someone.
Oh, okay. It was a gift. They do really nice gift packages.
Didn't last very long. Oh, if you were wondering.
Oh, you went in and you were out.
No, the relationship.
Oh, the relationship? Did they not like the gift?
No, that was the good. That was good, but.
Oh, it was everything else.
Yeah.
Well, what inspired you to start getting organized?
So I'm a suicide attempt survivor.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, when people ask, this is the third time. So not once, three times. Yeah, if you can imagine that. First two instances were not major, I would say. The last one was. It was 2 years ago this month. So.
Oh.
Yeah, I tried to kill myself. And then after that, when I went through my recovery process and healing and dealing with that, making sure I was good, I decided I wanted to help people that suffered the same thing. Because I don't ever want someone to feel like how I felt. It is the worst thing.
What is it that you felt? If that's,
it's just like, it's exactly that. Imagine you don't think you have anything to give to the world as a whole. You know what I mean? There's nothing you could do. You're in such a rough spot with yourself. You're not happy with yourself that you just don't think you can contribute to society at all. And you think that if you were to leave, people would be better off or people wouldn't miss you. That's exactly how it felt. And I can tell you, I spent days in the bathroom, 3 hours straight, just crying because I didn't know what to do, you know? So that's a lot of how it feels. You don't really get joy in anything. At one point I called the suicide hotline, which I applaud what they do. I like what they do. They do good work, but it didn't help me at all. I guess you could say it kind of did because I'm still alive, but the way they did it was I call in and, you know, they're like, well, is there any music you can listen to or movies you like or video games? But you don't take joy in anything. Nothing is good enough.
No, so. I actually, I know somebody who I had to call the police on them for this. And I called the suicide prevention hotline first.
Yeah.
And they were just like, oh, well, do they want to kill themselves? Do you think they're going to kill themselves? I'm like, yes. What should I do? And they're just like, well, just, I mean, there's nothing you can do. Just call the police.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, oh, okay. And then when they got out of the hospital, essentially, my friend told them that they needed just get into therapy, you know, and to just focus on other things. So it's just, I guess it's just it seems like a healthy reminder. They'll give you good reminders, but do you think in your experience, real connection to really pull people out of that? Is it even meant to be that?
I don't know. It's a tough relationship between me and the suicide hotline.
Yeah.
Because I tell people I don't like the way they work. Straight up, I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's not how I would handle it. But I think that people don't know where to put the money to be able to handle something like that. I think a lot of people who are in charge of these sorts of things, or the government, or whatever you want to blame, I don't think they're putting the money in the right places to be able to assist someone how I think it should be done. I take it upon myself to get all the training I need to respond to someone, and I don't get paid for it or anything. I tell them to call me, and I will be there no matter what. I will lose my job if it means saving someone's life every time, over and over. So for me, I think we should be putting money into something where we can have crisis response teams, which they do exist, but I don't think they're implemented enough or to a higher standard to be able to work around the clock all the time.
Yeah, like some people get really, really hurt by like police officers and stuff when they get called for suicide preventions. And, you know, sometimes I think people even like lose their lives, you know, because the person has a gun, they're going to kill themselves. Mm-hmm. Police show up and then it turns into a dangerous situation. That person, you know, isn't around anymore. It's just like, well, you were called to save a life.
Yeah.
You know, and then a life is lost too. And it's really hairy, you know, with like everything with suicide prevention.
Because there's all this training we can give to police and first responders, EMTs and all that. But I don't know if that's enough. I don't know if it's good enough. I don't know if we have to have people, not police and first responders, that can respond to a crisis situation. That's kind of why I do this nonprofit stuff. I want to talk to people. I do a lot of talking to different people just to figure out, like, what can we actually do? Like, this is a problem. How do we fix it? Because clearly the news isn't talking about it. Because they're too busy about what's going on in politics to care what's happening
with
to
our mental health.
With mental health, which suicide is absolutely skyrocketing. It still
is. Yeah, wouldn't you say that, like, mental health issues right now have, like, turned into, you could say, like, an epidemic? Like, everybody I talk to, they're, like, they're depressed or they have just, you know, like, dealt with suicidal thoughts, or they have bipolar 2 or like, you know, like, oh, I just got told I was schizoaffective. You know, it's just like, it's popping up more. Like, a part of me is like thinking, oh, our society is becoming more aware to the mental health issues that people have been having for decades, for centuries probably, and aren't just calling people crazy and just labeling them as useless, you know. But another part of me is like, I think there might be something going on where we're safer, have more food, more resources, you know, and more safety nets to live in this society, but we're jumping off of roofs, killing ourselves, you know, like doing things like that. It's like, why is it growing? And
I think it's insane when, and this is one reason that I watch the news, when they talk about things like gun violence, which, don't get me wrong, it's a problem, clearly, right? But when they're just spewing nonstop about that when suicide rates are absolutely higher, like, it just amazes me that they're so concerned about that.
I mean, you look at the music nowadays, like half of the, like a lot of the rappers nowadays are even talking about suicide, and that like used to not even be a thing. Like it's like we're obviously yelling it out, like our cries for help, like nationwide are out there, where people are just like, everybody casually is just like, kill myself. Like my mom always says, just like every joke has a little bit of truth in it. Why the fuck are we all saying that? Why is everybody just like, blow my brains out?
That's actually like, how we're like, trained too. If someone mentions it, we have to take it as a serious threat no matter what.
Yeah.
And respond to it accordingly. So you're right. I think that with the millennial generation coming up, it's a lot better because people like us are actually speaking. And we're bringing it to people's attention, which I think is good. But it's still kind of in that area where it's taboo. People don't want to talk about it. You know, my dad is kind of in that category where I'll bring something up to him, like depression or something. And he's one of those where if he pretends it doesn't exist, it doesn't have to exist in his world. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of the older generation are like that. Where they can just kind of like brush it off. It doesn't exist. If it's not in their face at all times, it's not an actual problem that exists. So...
how can we keep appearances? Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's so tough, man, with mental health. Like, it's because we just need, I personally think that we just need more people that just are in there, involved, like, and it keeps coming down the line. Like, we need mental health professionals more in schools. We need more mental health professionals in our police force. Mm-hmm. We need more mental health professionals, you know, in workplaces to make sure that, like, workers in high-stress situations. I mean, lots of companies have that, don't they? Like,
yes.
Where they have, like, somebody on-site for mental health, and, like, especially, like, in places, like, with high work strain, like, in Asia, I think that they have, like some stuff like that, like, to prevent suicide, because it's so high-prone. But, Yeah, I think absolutely. So we need to attack it even further at the root, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think that we shouldn't be just throwing medication at people either.
Fuck no. No, we should not. I have some pretty strong opinions about meds. Like, I know that some people are chemically imbalanced.
Yeah, for sure, it exists.
But, like, where do you draw the line where it's just, like, I'm just popping pills and hoping that, like, my issues go away mm-hmm. and, you know, and I need a chemical imbalance that helps me cope right. better with situations. Like, I want to get through things and I want to cope better with them, but I get so angry without, like, or I get so sad that I need something to pull me out. And then relatives of mine, they essentially just, they're just like on the couch.
Yeah.
They're just like zonked out on their antidepressants and on their anti-anxiety meds. And they're just like, and I talked to them just like, well, have you ever thought of therapy? And it's just like, therapy's a crock of shit. It's just like, what? I'm just like, what are you doing now? That's like fixing your thing. I mean, like, you have your pills and you don't feel anything.
Yeah, because it makes them function throughout the day, but it kind of takes away their humanity is what I tell people. Like, sure, you can function, that's great, but are you the same person you were?
It makes them, like, perfectly prepared to sit on the couch and just zombify. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
it's wild.
You know, not saying everyone's like me, but I did it completely without any medications. So it's definitely possible. I don't suggest it to everybody because it is tough. But I do think it's possible to go without just throwing money at pharmaceuticals. So,
do you think that the pharmaceutical company is partly to, I don't want to say to blame, but like partly responsible for what is going on, like mental health wise? Like, people think that pills are going to fix things in my mind, because, you know, like, the ads on TV mm-hmm. are just like, they just show like some lady frolicking in the field. It's just like, you get ideas of suicide. Fuck that shit, man. Just pop your fucking. And like, people That's just funny. Think it's that, it's just that quick. Yeah. Like, is that issue?
Marketing for sure plays a role. I mean, you know what marketing can do. You ever just look at the sciences behind marketing for
oh
sure?
Oh my gosh.
Like, it's insane. People don't realize just they're scrolling through Facebook, they're being marketed to, you know? So it's. I don't want to say I would blame pharmaceutical companies, but they don't help the problem. I think that a lot of that era where you see those commercials, I don't want to say it's over, but it's kind of being phased out.
I do think so. I think that we're like starting to wise enough to that. Mm-hmm. You mentioned scrolling. Have you seen those things like on like Facebook or like IG where they'll like have these people that you can text, you know, like mental health advisors, like BetterHelp.
Yes.
Like, what's your opinion on those, like, more like social media or like app based?
I think it's a good system.
Yeah.
I worked with someone else in the nonprofit community recently in the last year that is developing a similar system where they would put iPads in, for example, they have like a house for homeless people, right? And they would stay there. And they would put these iPads in with a mic and camera so they can talk face to face with someone in mental health, like a psychiatrist or someone, or a psychologist, someone like that. And they can, I don't want to say, like, kind of like ring their doorbell, like, hey, I need help now. And they can respond. Like, so whoever's available can respond and help them at that point. And they can also give medication over that if they need to.
They can be that referral?
They can prescribe, yes. They can referral.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. So I think it's a good system because with the suicide hotline, you can also text them. And I think that a lot of younger people would prefer that. Because how often do you get a phone call and you're like, I don't know who that is. I'm not going to pick it up.
My boyfriend,
he don't like talk on the phone.
He advocated for the BetterHelp because he says, I hate talking to people. Mm-hmm. I hate talking to people that I don't know and feeling vulnerable around strangers. Mm-hmm. Strangers and even phone calls are just too much of a kind of like a breach and like mm-hmm. in his like personal space almost. And yeah, I do think that is kind of like a millennial and like,
yeah,
like for sure under problem.
And it's interesting you say that too, because the reaching out for help is, I think, exactly what helps people. I tell everyone all the time, what saves someone from suicide is someone just coming up and saying, hey, I care. Like, let's talk about this right now. And that's all you need most of the time. Like I was talking about earlier, I showed up to my buddy's house, responded to him, and like I walked in, he just hugged me. It was like the longest hug of my life. And it was hard because this is like one of my good friends that is one of the strongest people I know. And he was one of the guys that always would say, like, I like that you're helping with the suicide thing, but he's like, I just think people who consider suicide are just stupid and selfish and are weak. Like, he was that person until it happened to him.
No, yeah, I completely have a similar story. Like, mm-hmm. I have a friend who had just gone through successfully through a crisis where he was thinking very seriously about killing himself and has gone himself into therapy. He's on a few medications, but like has like made like gradual steps, but all I've known him since high school, and mm-hmm. all throughout high school, he's always just like, suicide is for weak people, man. Like, yeah. it's for people who just like can't handle what life has to throw mm-hmm. at you. And I'm just like, hopefully nothing, hopefully you can carry everything that yeah. gets thrown your way. And yeah, he like, we sat on his couch and like, he like broke down that he's mm-hmm. just like, I don't want to kill myself, yeah. but I feel like that's what the only way. Yeah. Like, he's just to make all of this stop. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was like straight up what he said, like, yeah. just to make all this stop. And I'm like, what is all of this?
Yeah.
And then he's just like, I don't know. Like, he's mm-hmm. like, I don't know what all of this is, but it's just all the bullshit and what I don't feel like I can do to help any of mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. Yeah,
he was one of the strongest people I think yeah. I ever that. What is that like? Like, why do such strong? Like, it's always like the strongest people, yeah. the smilers, the laughers.
I think, and you know, I don't want to assume anyone's situation, but I think that a lot of it is they seem strong because they put that out there that they're strong. I mean, a lot of the time they are dealing with things that everyone else is dealing with. It's like I always tell people about Chester Bennington, you know, lead singer of Linkin Park.
Yeah, his wife, dude, had a lot to say about that.
I had a lot of people come up to me. This was very close around the time I went through my issue. Very, yeah. very close. And people ask me all the time, they're like, can you just explain that to me? I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, dude, he had kids and he had millions of dollars and he had this and he had that. And I was like, you're not immune to bad things happening to you just because you can throw money at it.
No, or yeah.
just you think good things are happening to you. Like, sure, he had kids, but that doesn't mean that's good all the time. Usually, with suicide, at least in my experience, is it's never one thing. That's why when your friend said, like, everything, because there's probably in his mind a list of, like, 40 things that are bothering him. And maybe the 41st thing popped up and that was the trigger and just meltdown. For me, like there was a lot of things going on in my life where I didn't really have my life together. Like I was doing fine. You know, I lived kind of paycheck to paycheck, which is normal for a lot of people nowadays. And I went through normal problems, depression, stuff like that. And then like I had a bad breakup and that was a trigger and that was it. You know, so it's just a combination of a lot of things happening at once that causes someone to kind of go into that meltdown mode. And then now I tell people, like I told my friend right there in his face, I was like, dude, think of it like the military. Like you deal with one problem and then you go to the next one. You do it step by step. If you look at everything, if you look at like, I need money, my girlfriend broke up with me, my kid is misbehaving in school, my car just broke down. If you look at all of it at the same time, like how am I gonna fix this whole situation? Yeah. It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
If you just deal with one step at a time and do it that way, you know, but you kind of have to train your mind to be able to focus on the one thing and solve that problem and then continue.
I think the problem with that is that we expect things to be solved very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, in our day and age, we want things now and we want instant gratification to be over with now. Yeah. We want instant gratification.
It's instant gratification. I can literally sit at home on my phone and swipe through people to date. I don't have to go out anywhere. I could do it in my bed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's like, it's not even a date anymore. It's just like, just come over.
Yeah.
Like, it's like we really have like bypassed.
Bro, it's a marketplace.
So many of
our. I tell people all the time.
Yeah. Like, pussy marketplace.
Yeah.
But like we completely bypass like the need to solve almost anything, mm-hmm. but we can't do that with mental health. There is no quick solution. I think that is like the wall that we're hitting.
Yeah. And there's so many mental health issues too. Like, I recently just finished watching Mindhunter, which is the FBI guys who invented the term serial killer, you know, by interviewing different people who did these sequence killings to see how they grew up, how their mental health formed over the years they were growing up, and just warning signs and things like that. And it just made me realize there's so many mental issues that you can't just say this person has this or this person has this. Like, I have my parents for a long time saying, I think you're autistic. And all my therapists are like, I don't think you're autistic at all. You know, everyone thinks they kind of know everything, you know, especially parents when they're trying to help you, because they don't want to see their kid in crisis. You know, my parents didn't want to see that. You know, when I was going through it, my dad was like, I don't know what to do for you. He's like, tell me what to do for you. I'm like, I don't know what to do for myself. I have no idea what to do. You know what I mean?
No, yeah.
So parents don't know what to do. And I think a lot of time, doctors and things, when you come in for mental health crisis, sometimes they don't know what to do. I mean, sure, they went through the training, they went through the schooling, but they just throw medication at something because everyone's different, right?
Yeah, as like what you said, like even, I feel like even if, let's just say somebody has bipolar one, I think that even if you narrowed it down to a diagnosis, there's still a complete spectrum of what it means mm-hmm. for each individual to be in their own bipolar one, you know? Like, I feel like physical diseases have, mm-hmm. like, kind of, like, a standard procedure in the ways that they work throughout your body.
Because people's bodies are all made, you know, roughly
like,
the same.
Right? Yeah, but, like, the things that are triggering the chemical imbalances or the stress that we can't handle in our mind, mm-hmm. you know, it's just a random domino effect.
Well, yeah, and there's just too many details. Like, for example, me and my friend, who I just responded to, we both went through a breakup, right? But, for example, he lost his dad last year. Maybe a kid called him a name in school. Maybe this happened. Maybe he was abused. But my story will be completely different, and that formed my mind in a completely different way. When you look at it like from a sociological standpoint, you know, these things develop your mind over time as a kid all the way through adulthood, and they form kind of how you look at the world. And those different things can affect you in different ways.
Yeah, they affect your coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And those things, I feel, are what vary the levels of stress that every one of a person's specific triggers could be. Like, so it's just like everybody has a specific trigger, and then they have a specific amount of stress they can take and a specific way that they cope with things based on each. It's too many details mm-hmm. to just think, that's going to help you.
Yeah.
This pill will help you. Yeah. My father, he has quite a few mental health issues of his own, and it's just been so crazy just over the last 12, 13 years, just watching his medications just shift. Mm-hmm. Just like, and all of his, he loses doctors and gains doctors. He's on on disability, so he has like Humana, which is like government funded mm-hmm. healthcare, and so he just, his doctors, it's like, yeah, you're not going to have this doctor anymore. So he has no stability with any doctor. And each of them just take a look at his charts, take a look at what he has to say. And then they're just like, well, we're going to switch up your pills.
Yeah.
You know, and then like it just completely throws him on a loop all the time. Like this, like trial and error. And, you know, they're not trying to get him to do therapy, you know. And that's just, yeah, mental health. I think that we really needed to step away from other things and need to focus more on creating new solutions. New, like, have you noticed that there isn't any new therapies? Like, I don't hear of any new like methods to like solve people through crisis.
Yeah, I think they're just so locked in on what they do know, which is understandable. If they know a way that works most of the time, that's what they're gonna go with.
I wish we can just like dive into people's like dreams and just be like, what happened?
Yeah, like some Black Mirror, huh?
Yeah, right.
All right. What else do you got for me, my guy?
What are some of your long-term goals for Gears for Life?
Oh, man. You know, I originally created Gears for Life because I'm in the motorsports industry.
Right on.
I raced. I'm into cars. I do all kinds of stuff like that. And I was like, dude, I want to build a car. And just like, I want to travel around. Like with the name on the side and kind of what I do. And I just want to talk to people. If someone gave me all the money right now, that's what I'd do for the rest of my life. I would just kind of drive around and just talk to people about what I experience. And hopefully I can like inspire them or have them in the crowd saying, dude, I experienced the same thing. If he's able to get over it, then I can do the same thing. You know what I mean? So I wanted to build a car, you know, put the colors of suicide prevention awareness on it, the nonprofit, stuff like that. Go to car shows, go to events, possibly get into do some amateur racing, just get the car scene. Because for me, I don't have the resources and money to really get into prevention. That's why I let like Nevada Coalition for Suicide Prevention, they do that kind of stuff. I'm just more for awareness. I just want to talk to people. I just want to tell my story, let people know what happened, and have them informed, basically.
Yeah, and then I think that the car will draw them in, right? Mm-hmm. Because people like like going to see something they like, you know. Yeah, a lot of people are into cars, fast cars.
You know, I like putting it in people's face.
Yeah.
Like I said, I have the tattoo on my neck, suicide prevention ribbon, says survivor under it, with a period after it. The tattoo artist asks, why a period after it? I'm like, because it's a statement. Like, I want people to know this is the reality. You know what I mean? So I just want, I like to put it in people's faces. Because no one's ever going to do anything if they don't know the reality. So that's why.
And then I do think that it's like, it's kind of like a nifty idea because like the car is something so, I want to say like Americana. And like, you know, it's like something so far away from the complexities of mental illness, you know, but there are so many people that are about cars and about that type of, you know, lifestyle that have mental health issues and probably have nothing in that worldview that's just tethering them also to mental health. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, someone, a guy, he actually did pass, I want to say a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, a kid that he had cancer, and he did the same thing with a car. And we call it the fuck cancer car because that's what it says in license plate. and he did that with an Exotic. He did it with a GTR, and he drove around, went to shows. He was at SEMA. He did all kinds of events with that car. Really and cool. They brought a lot of awareness, and they raised a lot of money and donated it to be able to help people. So I thought, well, I could do the same thing probably for suicide. So that's where I originally got the idea. And then just a lot of things in my life came up to where I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this. Like, so I'm still trying to figure out a way, the easiest way to actually get it done. Get it started. So for now, I'm just helping in the community, Nevada Coalition for Suicide Prevention, and talking to different people, and just getting involved that way rather than doing it all myself. So,
and yeah, I mean, it is easier to have like people around. That's what I was saying before, like community. You know, like put some of that weight on other people's shoulders. I mean, that's why we're here. We want to have like people like yourself on here to talk about your experience, to talk about these things, so that like, you know, more people can know that there are people like you, people like me, who care, you know? what's the best way, like, for people to reach out to the suicide, the Mental Health Coalition?
The best way, at least for Nevada, is through their website, Nevada Coalition for Suicide Prevention. But as far as, like, suicide as a whole, there's a lot of really good nonprofits out there that help with it. Like, for example, the Suicide Hotline is one of them. Or like American Association for Suicidology is one of my favorites. They're friends of mine. I've talked to them a few times. And they're great. They're out of Washington, D.C. And they do a lot of really good stuff for mental health. So I would just, the biggest thing is, I would just say reach out to whoever's in your community that can help. And like, if you're in Vegas, the Coalition is the best one to reach out to. It just depends on where you're at. But there are national things, like I said, the Suicide Hotline and American Association for Suicidology, just to name a couple.
Suicidology.
Yeah, it's actually a study of
suicide. Yeah, like I've not heard that one.
That's why I like them. That's why I want to get in touch with them, because they're actually doing science. They want to figure out why this happens.
Yeah.
So that's why it was important for me. Like, preventing it is one thing. Like, great, we're saving lives. That's fantastic. You know, don't get me wrong. But I want to know why it happens.
Understanding, like,
why this is happening.
Yeah, like, most animals, essentially, are built with these hard wirings to keep themselves alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, why is it that, especially since it's easier to live right now, why are we so prone to now end life?
Yeah.
You know? Like, when it's like, oh, we're expected to live into our 80s. And it's just like, well, then why is some, I'm in the 27 club. Like, no, I never even thought I'd make it to 18. I don't want to sound like I'm mocking, but it's just like, why is that our lifestyle? Like, why is that like our, I want to get to the root of it too. Part of me thinks it's the food.
I mean, maybe. Yeah. Well, that's part of, keeping a healthy diet is part of being healthy as a human being as a whole. You got to have your mental health, your physical health. You got to have positive things around you. You got to have positive people around you. You know, it all comes together. And once all those things break down, you know, that's when you get into crisis mode. That's when you have that meltdown. So
that's true.
At least that's my opinion on it.
Well, I mean, if you don't eat well, you won't feel well. And so you won't be able to cope as well. Yeah. So
your body won't have the energy.
We're just eating Oreos.
I mean, they're good though.
I love Oreos. I was with my boyfriend.
Double stuff all day.
Dude,
don't get normal.
They have like these maple cream ones that I haven't tried, and like I'm like a fanatic. Where I'll be
mint?
Like,
birthday cake.
The thin mint Oreos.
Bro,
those are crazy. No, like my boyfriend just had me like buy like raw oats and like berries and like apples, and we were gonna do that. I was like, dude, there's maple cream.
Dude.
Or as he's like, if you buy those, I will open them and I will chuck them all into the parking lot. I was just like, but they're maple cream. They might not even be here next time.
Dude, I never thought I would have almond and cashew milk in my refrigerator, but here we are.
I love cashew milk.
Bro, I just tried it a week ago.
Cashew milk's
literally
bomb.
Cashew milk's bomb. So, it is. I mean, part of it is being healthy, you know? And I tell people after everything that happened to me, and they ask me, like, you know, it was the worst time in your life. 100% it was. And I don't want anyone to feel that way. But I tell people, I would not go back and do it over, ever. I would not change what happened to me. You know, I tell people, like, I would want to kill myself over and over and over if it means I am the way I am now, wanting to help people.
The
and
growth.
Feeling better than I have ever felt in my entire life. So I would do it over and over, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the things that we have to, like, climb over, the adversity, it's what builds us.
Yeah.
Like, it's cliche, it's lame, whatever. But it's just, like, it's true. Like, mm-hmm. It's just, like, when people have to go through things, that it really lists down, like, what matters.
The obstacle, you know, is the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oof. Dude. Obstacle for myself right now. Like, yeah, like, I was actually, like, 100 pounds lighter, and then I, like, ballooned back. It's crazy. Like, it's just, like, how, like, I was, like, feeling, like, 100, and then mental health, like, just comes into play, and then you just don't. I start seeing the things that I had worked really hard to do, just, like, starting to build itself back up again. And it's just, like, that nihilism that's just, like, well, who gives a shit?
Dude, let me tell you this story. And it's actually shocking anytime anyone hears this.
Yeah.
Because they're like, I can't believe someone said that to you. So after it happened, I started my nonprofit. And I was just kind of talking to people about it. I hadn't actually, like, launched. I was just like, you think this would be a good idea?
Right.
And I go roller skating a lot. I love skating. I do dance skating, old school. I love it.
Oh, like, with the four wheels?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Straight up 70s.
Like,
I love that.
I go, like, almost weekly. I love it. I have a lot of fun. And I was there, and I just talked to someone who's kind of like an acquaintance. I don't call people friends unless I see them on a daily basis.
Right on.
So it's like I know you, but we're not like bros.
We're not friends.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's just someone I see every couple weeks. But I was like, I was telling her, and I was like, so this is the situation. And, you know, I like, if I can save one life after everything I've been through, like, it'll be worth it for me. And like, she was listening, and she's like, okay, cool, blah, blah, blah. That's really good. I'm glad you're doing that. And then the conversation was over, and I started walking away. And then she kind of, like, grabbed my shoulder and, like, pulled me. And, like, pulled me, like, really close. Like, awkwardly close. Like, I'm not a touchy person. And there was, like, people around. Because she didn't want anyone to hear what we were talking about.
Right.
But she pulled me, like, really close. And she's short. So I'm, like, hunched. Like, trying to listen to her. Yeah. And she's, like, very serious tone. She's just, like, if you don't do what you say you're going to do and help people, I hold you guilty. And I was just, like, okay. Like, because in my brain, I was, like, you don't say some shit like that to people. You know what I mean? Like, you don't just say that to someone who just went through, like, suicide and recovery.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you're guilty if you don't help people now. Because you went through the experience. And at the time, I was like, wow, that's kind of fucked up.
I mean.
And then, like, an hour later, I went home and I was like, she's right, though. Like, I'm not going to hold her accountable
though?
For being right. I think so.
How?
Like say you experience something. For example, I'm a driving instructor. Right.
Yeah.
So I became a driving instructor because I used to race, because I'm experienced in racing. I know how to race. And say people want to learn how to race, but there's no instructors because, well, we're not responsible. They can learn on their own like we did. And then they just start killing themselves, like getting killed, hitting walls, getting killed and stuff like that. Don't you feel kind of guilty because you have the experience and you are able to teach them, but you decided not to?
But what if a person is barely able to actually drive the car? Like, what if somebody's barely able to even figure it out themselves, and now you're asking them, now make this person know how to do it?
If they want to.
You know, in layman's sense, like, if somebody wanted to kill themselves and they attempted suicide and, like, got through it, and now they're just trying to now maintain, survive, and thrive.
Well, you have to be healthy, obviously.
You know, like, yeah, like, you can't just, like, you said that you're straight out, like, you just.
Yeah, I was,
like, this
yes.
just happened. You know, like, mm-hmm. that could throw you back into crisis.
Yeah, but she made a good point to me, like, it's exactly that. I went through the experience. I should take that experience and help other people. Not everyone gets to live through the experience I lived through. You know what I mean? You know, Marcus Aurelius said, you can also commit injustice by doing nothing. So for me, that's what I prescribe to, and that's what's important to me. If I was doing nothing right now, and I knew that, like, for example, in Pahrump a couple years ago, you had, like, two middle schoolers kill themselves. You know what I mean? Like, I heard one of them hung themselves in Walmart. Like, if I knew that was going on and I could do something about it and I didn't, like, I don't think I would be able to sleep. I don't think I'd be able to, like, look at myself in the mirror. You know what I mean? So that's the way I see it, at least. So to me, her saying that, like, it was critical for me to hear that at that time. I think, like, I was meant to hear that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here doing what I do.
Well, I mean, maybe that's why she ended up telling you and not somebody who wouldn't have been able to take that and would have been like, been like, I can't take that kind of responsibility. Like, because that's how I see it. I'm just like, if somebody is trying to get through it, mm-hmm. trying to build themselves back up, and you're still feeling pretty vulnerable, and somebody's just like, well, you can't just help yourself. You got to pull other people with you.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, I have responsibility for myself, but how much am I actually meant to make sure that other people do it? What if somebody pulled themselves out by themselves?
Yeah.
You know, what if they don't even know how to be that for another person?
Right.
You know? I guess it's just like that. It's just like, it's complicated.
Yeah. Like,
that's the common theme for this whole mental health thing. It's just, it's so complicated.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but, like, I tell people, like, the bravest thing I ever did was continue my life when I wanted to die. Like, so I think the people who went through that are very strong, and they can handle things like that. At least, like, for me now, like I was telling you earlier, like, I don't get offended. Like, you have to try really hard to get me upset, because what's worth getting upset over, honestly?
Exactly.
Like, so for me, and my mom helped me a lot with that, you know, she, when I'm on the phone with her going through something, I don't live near my parents at all. I haven't lived near my family in years. I don't like cold weather, and they decide to live in a place where it gets 130 inches of snow a year. So for me, I'm not interested. And I'm always on the phone with her every time I'm going through everything, and she's always like, Christian, you're going to get through it. You always do. Like, you do every single time, and you're here. She's like, you've been through literally the worst, and you're still here. So you're going to get through it. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Cool. And then that's it.
She's like, she's like reassuring you of, like, the power that you have.
Yeah, it's crazy because, like, even the coalition, a lot of the members of the coalition, they tell me, like, you're really self-deprecating. I'm like, yeah, because, like, I don't think I'm that great. And then they bring up, like, dude, you survived a suicide attempt. I'm like, yeah, someone else can do it. I did it. Someone else can do it. They're like, dude, you were a professional racer. Like, you've raced against airplanes, and you've done this, and you've done that, and you've created a business, and you've created a nonprofit. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, okay. I'm no one special. And they just always are pushing that on me. They're just like, dude, you've done this, and you've done this. And I don't see them as anything major, but it helps me because everyone else is like, dude, you have done some crazy shit in your life. You know what I mean? So that helps a lot. Like, knowing that people are there supportive. And that's kind of what I tell everyone when it comes to suicide. Like, you don't need medication or anything, really. When you're in that crisis mode, like my friend was, after he went through all that, I sat with him for like several hours, and I was leaving, and he was like, dude, you know what? That's really all I needed. I just needed someone to come over here and talk to, because no one was answering me. And you answered, and you came by, and you talked to me, and we worked through it. And I feel better.
Yeah, it's like you're reaching out, but mm-hmm. like you also have like a rubber band on like the end.
Yeah.
And it's like you can only reach out so far.
I can tell you right now, like every time you're in a crisis like that, like I would go through my phone, because no one wants to die, right? Like when you're in that, you're like in your head, and this is reality, because every like survivor will tell you the same thing. You're like calling people, you're just like, maybe if just one person answers, I won't do it. That's literally what goes through your head. Like, you're just trying to, like justify.
Bargain.
Yeah. You're literally just trying to be like, if maybe one person answers, then, you know, they were looking at their phone. Like, they care. Like, I'm not going to do anything. And that's literally how it was. I was going through my phone book at the time.
My dog, like, I'm going to get can't. Like, I went through a time myself. Mm-hmm. And, like, I had my dog. And he got me through it because mm-hmm. I was just like, no one's going to take care of my fucking dog. I was like,
yeah, dude.
I was like, no one's going to take care of my dog. And it's just like, what's going to happen to him? And like, he didn't ask for any of this.
Yeah.
I like took him from his mother and like his siblings to own him. And now I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
You know, and just That one. Like, I just kept telling myself, well, I have to take him out. Yeah. I have to, like, walk him. I have to, like, like, I just started, like, creating, like, dog activities and being like, no, I need to take care of my dog.
You literally try and grasp and, like, anything you can because you don't want to die. But, like, it's weird because in those moments, that's when no one's picking up their phone. At least in my experience, it's always just, like, nothing and nothing and nothing. That's how it feels. Like, you feel like you're reaching out and there's literally nobody. Like, your parents could be downstairs, which in my case they were. During one of my experiences, and it's just like, you don't want to go down and tell them because, like, how do you feel? Like, for example, for me, my parents, very successful, own multiple businesses, worked for the president, does some crazy, crazy stuff. And, like, for me, like, growing up in that kind of family, in that environment, in a military household, how am I going to be able to walk down, look my dad in the eye, and be like, Dad, I want to kill myself? You know what I mean? Like, how are they really going to respond in a positive way? It's very difficult.
Kind of the opposite, because... my parents, like, my family has been pretty much poverty. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, both of my parents, they've struggled all their lives. They've dealt with their own things. My father has his own mental health issues. So what I felt in that time is, how am I going to add to that right now with my shit?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, my parents are, like, old school, like, Hispanic, so they're just, like, unfortunately, my mom has gone a lot better.
She's gonna, like, go grab the slipper and start beating you with it.
No, she's gonna be very harsh about it. Like, they're just like, you gotta get through it. You gotta push through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, my aunts and uncles, like, they call that type of stuff just the word is débil, which means weak.
Mm-hmm.
El está débil, and that's just like, his brain's weak.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just it. It's just, like, he needs to wake up. That's what they're always just going on about. They just need to snap it in. Like, they need to go to church or something.
Well, that's just an example of, like, the same thing with Chester Bennington, where, like, it can affect anybody. It doesn't matter. Like, I'm afraid I'm going to go tell my dad. He's going to be like, I don't know what to do for you. Because they literally have the money to throw around, but they don't know what to do with it. You know what I mean? So it affects everyone. And there's really, like, no one's immune to it at all. Like, it doesn't matter. Especially problems with the mind, you know? Because you're always in your own mind. It's always going to be affecting you some way.
So. I mean, one of my biggest reasons why, like, when I was young, why I wanted to do it was just homophobia against myself. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just really internalizing all stuff. So just I was just in my own head all the time. Like, sometimes it would just flash. The word gay would just, like, flash in my forehead. Just be like, I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, I'm like, what is that? Like, stop. Just, I'm like, I'm just trying to roll a blunt right now. Like, just leave me alone.
It sucks.
Like, and then that's also the thing. I was just the numbing. Mm-hmm. The things that you do to numb yourself.
You're just pushing it away.
Yeah.
And, like, as it builds up, like I said earlier, it's that list of things just keeps building and building and building until something triggers it. You know, you kind of have to deal with your problems head on. Because if they build up, that's when you go through your crisis. So... it's tough, and we work with a lot of communities like that. Like, it's big to work with the gay community or sexual abuse community or drug or military and police. With how much hate the police are getting in recent times, it's amazing just in precincts. Like, when one suicide happens, it's just like a chain reaction. Like, it just keeps happening.
Well, they're very close to each other in precincts.
Yes, and also, you have to remember, like, I know... you know, cops sometimes do bad things. Sometimes they're bad at their jobs. Sometimes I'm bad at my job. Sometimes I'm instructing someone and I go off the track because I didn't hit the brake hard enough. You know, these things happen. People make mistakes. It's just that they're held up in such a high place that it gets all over the news. And you have to remember that police officers are, every day, they're only seeing someone at their worst time of their life. That's it. That's all they're seeing, you know. So it's very difficult for them on their mental health to be only seeing the bad in the world. Like, just imagine if you woke up every day, you know, you had your breakfast and you went into work and you had to arrest 30 people that were at the worst day of their life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And they're meant to stay tough. They're meant to stay tough throughout all of
this. Yeah. But, like, police and everyone, first responders, all those guys, they're just seeing the worst. Just literally the worst.
And they're expected to be tough.
Yes.
They're expected to just stay hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they, you know... movies like, I can't think of it right now, the Jake Gyllenhaal one and Michael Pena, I think is his name.
God, I love that movie.
Dude, that shows, that's like reality.
I need to know what that movie is.
I know, I can't think of the name. It's like three words.
He's bald. Yes. And
But like, and they go home and they're like crying to their wife, and she's like, that's reality. Like, those guys see the worst. Yeah. They get shot at. You know what I mean? Can you imagine a normal person just getting shot at? Like, you know what I mean?
No, so like, that would be like their issue of the year. Like, it's just like, if they got shot at, if I got shot at one time, everything that happens for the next year it's just going to relate to that one day when that one guy shot at me.
But did you hear I got into a shootout? Like, for the rest of your life, like 10 years later, you're telling your grandkids, like, dude, I got into a shootout.
I don't
The cops are like, yeah, I did that twice yesterday. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's hard. Everyone's affected differently.
They need more. I really do think that, like, the police officers are just not being given. I mean, part of the reason is that there's not enough people who want to be police
not
officers.
Not anymore. That's
yeah, there's not enough people that want. So if somebody needs time off to recuperate mentally, and somebody needs to take that time on, there isn't that type of cycling of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we need you on the force.
Yeah.
We need you on the beat.
Like,
there's no time for your problems.
Honestly,
and then
it's all about, like, I swear, I always just push, it's all about support and having someone there. Because we're in an age where we are using social media and things. Like, I can be at home and be social. And people think, oh, that's enough. It's not. Like, literally, the human brain, it's healthy to be social with people in their presence. You're supposed to.
Yeah.
You can die, people die from being incarcerated in black rooms.
Babies.
They don't have social.
Babies.
You know what I mean?
They will die without touch.
It's one of those things that people don't realize. And I think that with the way social media and technology has gone, it's making things worse. And people should support people and go out and be supportive of each other. And people aren't doing that because they're just so worried about their own problems. And then they're posting only the good things that happened to them on social media.
That is true.
I tell people that are on Instagram, they're like, yeah, but they have more followers, or they have this, or they have that, or they have this car, or they have this house. And look at their life. I'm like, they're literally only posting the best things that are happening to them.
And then a lot of those people are fake.
Like, in my bathroom, crying and taking selfies, like, oh, almost committed suicide.
Hard day today.
Like, you know what I mean?
That's not.
It's not the reality. So, and it's
not. There are some people. It's very cool. I feel like there's, like, YouTubers and stuff that'll straight up, like, just, like, put the camera on and, like, be talking about their terrible day and shit. And but then there's, like, people, like, I'm not gonna name drop. Screw it. But there are people who are on there who essentially conflate small issues and like, they're essentially calling on to their fans to pray for them for their hardships, you know, like, whether it be like them building a mansion or like not having a deal that they wanted to make like $2 million, you know, like, yeah, like that's what like sometimes it turns into. But like, there are some people that are like very genuine. But I agree. I think that we need more people just to reach out and spend those hours like you did with your friend and like call the police, you know, like if these things are serious, I don't care, you know, like if that person has to spend 3 days being evaluated, they just said they're going to do it, you know, like stop caring about that stuff, you know, that, oh, well, what's going to happen to them afterwards? What if they lose their job? They might lose their life, you know.
You know, I actually lost my job over my attempts.
Yeah.
I mean, can you believe that? And that's messed up. Not calling them scumbags or anything, but it's kind of scumbaggy. But my manager at the time,
I'll call them scumbags.
Like, bro, I came in. It happened in the morning, and I was like driving to work, crying. You know what I mean? And I was like, I have to go into work. Like, you know, like I have to be there. You know, and I called them and I just told them what happened. They're like, just come into work. You don't have to clock in. You don't have to work. We just want you to be there so we know you're safe. Whatever, okay? That's good. But then, like, my boss at the time pulled me aside later on. This was well after that happened. And he's like, you know, don't tell anyone that, like, you tried to commit suicide because people might use that against you. I was like, what? Like, are you serious? That's what he said to me.
Use that against
you? Yeah, like, use it against me. As far as, like, getting ahead or just living my life. They're like, don't ever mention these things you went through, like depression or anything like that, because people don't like that. Like, people don't like to deal with that sort of thing. And I was like, are you fucking serious? Like, that's what you're telling me? And then later on, I ended up getting fired just because they said, like, you know, you have too many issues with depression and stuff like that, that you just, we never know if you're going to come in. Or it's like, really? Like, shouldn't you be helping people? You know what I mean? Like, shouldn't you just care? But no.
Employees are supposed to be looked at as assets. So, yeah, like.
Businesses don't do that. Yeah, all like, they care about is, are you going to make us money? Like, how much money are you making us today on this hour? Like, this person makes this much money for us an hour. You
know what I mean? That cog fell out.
It's just.
Put another one.
Yeah. It's just super shitty. And until, like, it stops being a taboo, like, depression, stuff like that, it's just. People, it's going to, suicide is going to continue to rise.
No, yeah, like, back to what I was saying about, like, my family, like, they're old school. Like, my mom, she just came to terms with, like, bullying as, like, a real concept, you know? Like, like back home, like, that's, like, they're barely showing, like, after-school specials that are, like, warning people, like, parents and stuff about the dangers of bullying. Mm-hmm. And my mom, she's like, this is, like, a new thing. To them, they're like before it's just like bullying, like it's just like haha, like it's like it's just pecking order. It's you know, it's like we all have to go through it. She calls you fat, you call her ugly, he calls you stupid, you call him, you know, poor. Like it's just like everybody has their thing, and everybody just has to deal with it. I'm like, no, mom, not everybody has to deal with it.
Yeah, until kids start killing themselves, yeah, like, are you gonna pay attention?
Yeah, like a lot of kids decide to not deal with it. And then, like, come on, there are people who don't have to deal with it. There's people who meet the standards, and then they are now a reflection onto everybody else who is being bullied to think lower, especially with social media, with everybody just showing their amazing lives, you know, and then everybody else just seeing themselves, you know.
That's just another thing that also
they almost, like, bully themselves because they're not able to produce the images that these people can produce.
And that's a huge problem, like, that leads to suicide, too, is not just bullying, but, like, we've mentioned bullying and drug addiction and, like, all these communities, the LGBTQ plus community, all these different communities that are affected by suicide because everything that they're going through kind of leads into that. And so, like, the reason why we can't come up with a solution is because, well, okay, now we help the bullies, but now we got to go over to the LGBTQ community and we got to form up a solution for them. And the bully solution might have taken 30 years to come up with a mental health solution. So now you got to start over on this one. Because what worked with bullies and kids 12 to 18 are not going to work with that community.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, so you got trans people in their 30s trying to navigate through their life, through their workforce, changing themselves and everything.
So they kind of
divorce threw this, and it's not going to be the same.
They threw this medication at everyone. They're like, oh, well, the kids, they're just too rambunctious. We'll give them Ritalin, and it'll be good for them. And Adderall. Then like these, yeah. And then this community, they can have medication. They can have Paxil, Xanax. That Zoloft, fixes it. Yeah, they just like blanketed the whole problem. Like this is what helps everyone. All these medications, we're good.
Yeah.
And it's not the fix. You know what I mean? So it is a difficult problem. Like, and I always ask people when I'm doing my interview, because usually I'm on that side. I'm not on this side.
Right on.
And I usually have like three main questions I ask. And I actually want to ask you one of the questions. If you right now, if the government was like, Angel, you're in charge to fix the suicide problem.
Oh my goodness.
And here is literally all of the government's money. Fix it. What would be the first thing you'd be like, this is what I'm going to do? What would you do?
I think that the first thing that we should do is to, I don't know, like maybe like send somebody over to the, like, every single citizen's house.
Well, because and this be like, is what,
how you doing?
This is what government goes through. You know, the nonprofits come up to them and be like, you have all this money, do some shit. You know what I mean? That's what people are going
through. I would totally implement the first thing that I said about the police force.
Yeah.
I would try to create as many mental health jobs that I could and implement them into schools and our precincts, for one. I would change the prison system to make it less about being a punishment and more so about being real rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. These people kill themselves. These people are also parents who will like create, you know, the domino effect that just like keeps this all going. Like they're going to have children as well, you know, after they get out of prison, they're going to still be on the streets as well, or, you know, like living their own lives. So creating a better rehabilitation for prisoners is definitely a thing. Military. military, 100%. I don't want to see legless veterans on the corner. That's crazy.
Bro, we have 22 military members kill themselves every day from suicide.
Like, that's insane. And I want, I would throw as much money as I could to get people who literally died so that I can sit in this room and bitch about people killing themselves.
Yeah, literally.
Who are now killing themselves after saving our country. You know, like, it's gross.
It's fucking crazy. Because, like, just hearing you talk, I'm getting pissed off.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? It's gross.
Like, why is no one else getting pissed off about this?
Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Oh, but, you know, Trump said some shit. I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
And then it's like, Trump says support our troops, but you don't care about our troops.
Yeah, I just don't.
As soon as our troops come home, you're just like, get away from me, bum. I don't have any change.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? Like, I know there's hundreds of thousands of military members living, you know, wonderful lives and have success. But what about the people that don't? Or what about the people who are living good lives but are suffering through PTSD? Like, I would want that to be an issue more as well. So schools, precincts, prisons, military, I want all of them to have more more licensed mental health professionals just trying to talk to them.
Yeah.
Trying to be there. Trying to pry. Fuck it. You know, we need to be there. We don't just want to be like, well, maybe this med will work. Like, I think that if I were to have all the money, I would just try to get more people who are caring to an opportunity to be able to care for others.
I think this is a lot of the problem that the government faces too, is just you mentioning all that. Again, you're mentioning the different communities. Like, when you're talking about military, for example, now if we throw in the money into the military to help them fight against their depression, mental health problems, and suicide, then you have to deal with training and what they go through on a daily basis, and war. And then if you're in the LGBTQ community, you have to deal with...
Can I plug the center real quick?
Yeah, let's
see. Yeah, LGBTQ plus, you know, there is a great place for them in the Las Vegas community.
Yeah.
The center is an amazing place right by downtown. Love that place.
Exactly. And with them, you're dealing with, you know, you're dealing with bullying for them, and you're dealing with not being accepted into society in some cases. And then you look over at children and bullying, and then you have to deal with parents, then you have to deal with schools having money, you have to deal with teachers, and then you go over to jails, and you have to deal with, for example, drug problems and pharmaceutical company and judging people based on skin color or religion or things like that. So the mental health problem and suicide affects all these communities, and you can't just throw money at it and be like, this fixes this, because you're dealing with all these little problems. You know,
I would also add to the legislation to try to make all drugs decriminalized.
Yeah.
Drug addicts should not be in prison.
Yeah.
Drug addicts need help.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, granted, I want to change the prison system to be more about rehabilitation, but this is to rehabilitate people who have harmed others or have harmed a system willingly, while drug addicts are kind of just harming themselves.
Yeah.
You know, so I just don't think that they need the same methods of rehabilitation.
Yeah, so this problem literally spans all these communities to the point where the only way to fix this problem is to fix quality of life just in general, and that's not something that we can just fix. You know, there's so many issues in place in maybe this government or maybe the government over across the pond or here or there. It doesn't matter. It's just that quality of life has to improve in general. Otherwise, we're just going to continue to see these suicide rates go up. So at least that's my opinion on it.
I mean, we can't just rely on the government to fix suicide prevention, because the government has nothing to do with how we feel about ourselves.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, it is a cultural movement that we need to make, where we really just, without thinking it's cringy or stupid, just give each other a hand to really actually try to care about each other without, like, putting any of that toxicity. Because that's, like, really how I always view it. It's just, like, the reason why people don't want to help each other is because they just don't think it looks right on them. Mm-hmm. Like, they, like, it shouldn't be their responsibility, or that it'd be too awkward, or this and that. They just give themselves a million excuses when they're viewing somebody in pain.
Yeah.
You know?
And that'll only come from an evolution of people. Because right now, everyone's just going to be like, yeah, well, the government will fix it for me. Or this person will fix it for me.
Yeah, I'll say it right now. The government will never
fix
it. Even if if I implemented everything I just said, I'm pretty sure we're still going to have a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it needs to be us who cares about each other. You know, like, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you did not do anything harmful to yourself. Really.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I'm glad everybody's here. I'm glad that even if you're a terrible, like, even if you're a rude person, you know, but you wanted to kill yourself, it's just like, good, you know, because mm-hmm. it's like you're trying.
No one should ever have to feel like they don't deserve to live in a society with everybody else.
Yeah. You know, we all make our mistakes. We all have our pitfalls. And that's also the part of suicide, I think, a depression, at least for myself, whenever I feel like I'm dealing with depression, is that I rate my life based on other people's mm-hmm. expectations of where I should be on my age or my gender or where I grew up. You know, it's just like, I'm just like, yeah, as of right now, I have an F. You know, because I haven't done this or that in my life by now.
Dude, you should hear me too. Like, it's the same thing with me. You know, I haven't seen anyone. I haven't been in a relationship for 2 years since I went through that issue. Oh. And like, and I'm not saying I'm old, but like, I'll be 29 in like a few months, right?
I just turned 27.
So and like, dude, and everyone, and like, I'm waking up like, bro, if I don't have a kid like right now, I'm gonna be fucking old as fuck. When they have kids or something, you know what I mean? Like, I'm worried about society's normal standards of how we should live at what age. So that kind of thing bothers me.
Have you seen 50-year-olds nowadays?
Bro.
They're banging.
I don't want to see 50-year-olds
banging. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. They're fucking, everybody's, like, health-wise, they're, like, people are trying to take care of themselves more mm-hmm. into later stages. So if you're a parent into later stages, don't be like our parents.
Yeah.
You know, like, be like these people who are just taking, like whenever I go to Venice Beach or something like that, like, you always just see like some like 70-year-old dude with like a white beard just like jogging shirtless with like a six pack on the beach. I'm just like, yeah, like, why can't we all just like try to just like look at being old as just a step and not like a destination where it's just like, oh, and then I'll be old. And everything is over.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's like, I'll probably live another 30, 40 years, but everything's just over.
Yeah, I hear you.
Especially we define being old, like, even younger nowadays. Like, especially, like, in the gay community, like, I feel like if I'm already, like, 70. I'm 27 years old. But it's just like, I'm already too old. I'm already a daddy in some people's eyes. You know, it's just like, what? That's just because your dad had you at 18. That's not fair.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's funny.
No, yeah, I don't want... I actually look forward to getting old. I actually want to be... Yeah, that'll be nice. I mean, if the world's still around.
I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, I think we'll be fine. But like, it's just a nice thought. It's just like, well, that means that we made it. You know, how much farther we make it past when I die, I don't know.
You know, humans have a way of coming up with the solution to things right as it's right at a catastrophe. Right at the brink. Yes.
Yeah.
Because they know that they have to fix things to stay alive. It's fight or flight.
Well, it's like, I think it's like the 20, 30, 30 rule, where it's just like the first people who care about something or that will find a new trend, like, that's the first 20%. Mm-hmm. And then after that, like, some time will pass. And, like, they're the real goal-getters. Like, they're like, I've seen these issues coming a mile away. And then after that, it'll be another 20% who will see the fact that somebody else has caught onto it. And then 60% is just like, you guys with your new confangled ideas. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then slowly 30% will catch on, and then the rest 30% are just, you know, people who just are behind the times. Mm-hmm. That's how I remember when I was like 19, Amway was like using like leadership groups to like try to trick young people into doing their business, and I was like going to some of their seminars and they were talking about that.
Oh, did you say Amway?
Amway, yeah, the MLM.
I mean, I ain't going to say they're a pyramid scheme, but they're a pyramid scheme.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. When they would talk about that, they would be like, well, just like when somebody tells you that's a pyramid scheme, ask them, what's not a pyramid scheme? And I'm just like, You're just like
people that
like
don't do illegal shit.
You're misdirecting them now. Like they're like, well, you know, everybody has a boss, and then under them there's like supervisors, and then under that there's workers. What is that? That's a pyramid. I'm like,
it's funny because they say exactly that.
Yeah. No. I sat in the meeting like that, and I was just like, do you tell? I'm 18 and so impressionable. Like, you know, yeah.
I can make how much money? Really?
Yeah. And all you have to do is convince all your friends and family to get this product that in like 3 months they will hate you for.
Dude, they're a trip.
I got out of it. Yeah, no worries. Dude, no worries.
They're a trip.
They did the math, and like whenever they talk about like how, like when the people who try to push pyramid schemes try to talk about the math and everything, we would run out of people on the planet before it actually happened. And that's assuming every single person on the planet jumped on this pyramid scheme.
No, yeah, if everybody does it, then it can't work.
It's like you do five,
there has
you
to
five,
be.
It just goes exponentially. It's just like, you no, I can't. How math works.
Dude, we're going to run out of people. What? Am I going to get babies in Amway?
The one I knew of, they wanted 12. I was like, dude, there's like 30 of you already. I'm pretty sure Las Vegas is done for this one. Like, there's no more people. They're not in existence anymore.
They're still going. Like, I have some friends on Facebook that were from that. And, like, they're still doing their thing. They're still having, like, meetings and, like, big houses that... Like, that's the thing. That, like, 10 people will live in a nice house and, like, do Amway Real World. Where, like, none of us can afford this lifestyle. But we got to have meetings here. Because this is a really nice house and it'll make people think that we're rich. You know? And it's just, like, there's, like, 4 of you to a room. And, like, there's, like, no furniture upstairs. Like, it's all just whiteboards. Like, it's creepy! There goes really is money. Yeah. It's wild.
Got anything else or we Gucci?
I mean, like, this has just been a great talk.
Do you have any other things that you want to talk about your organization or how people could get involved?
Not really, because I'm kind of, like, selfish and, like, I like to do everything.
No, well, yeah.
But how do you want the community to help support you?
The Mental Health Coalition, yeah.
How do you want them to get involved to push what your mission is?
For me, I just want people to be educated, that's all. I think people should just go to the training. I think people should just train and know how to spot warning signs in someone in crisis. And I think that it should be in the school system.
Yeah.
I think you should have to go through a class mental health. It should not be health class. It should be mental health class, physical health class. Like when people ask me, like, the money question, like, what would you, like, if you had the money, what would you do? I'd be like, well, first, there would be a class in school for mental health. How to spot if someone is in crisis, you know, how to respond to your friend if you see these kind of warning signs, like learning about mental health. Like, psychology shouldn't be a college course. It should be in elementary school.
Or an elective in high school.
Yeah. It should be taught at the start, similar to how people say, like, well, if I was taught how to do my taxes in school, like, yeah, why aren't we teaching that kind of shit?
You know that, you know what I mean? At the school that I went to, the personal finance class was a remedial course.
Yeah.
That, like, you would only take if the school deemed you not smart enough to, like, pass Algebra 2 pass, you know, there was, like, this one called, like, Math Ed or something, where essentially it's just training for the proficiencies, and, like, some kids wouldn't be able to pass that. So they would throw the kids that are the least likely to try to retain any information into personal finance so that they can keep it filled.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it wasn't an elective that you could choose. Your counselor would refer you to that class if there just really was no other way to help you pass math, which is good. I mean, it means that, like, people who would otherwise not learn anything informative, like, are getting an opportunity to learn how to do their taxes. But I mean, come on, they're throwing the kids that literally don't pay attention in any other class into this class, and then they're not going to pay attention to this one.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's fruitless. Like, there's no reason that why the class even existed at El Dorado.
Like, to answer your question, it's like, I just think people should be educated and go through the classes and do things like that, because When I do my talks with interviews with people, I call them conversations because I don't like it to sound like I'm interviewing them. I just want to have a casual discussion. Is, like, I ask them, the first question I ask is, have you ever been affected by suicide? How has it affected your life? Or have you ever experienced suicide? How has it affected your life? And I hate, like, when I go walk around, I ask someone, like, oh, how has suicide affected you? And they say, oh, I've never met anyone who's committed suicide. I don't know anyone. It's never affected me. And I'm like, you're lying, because I think the number now is one suicide affects 252 people on average, right? So one period. Affects 252 people after the fact. So, and then I'm like, okay, so you know who Linkin Park is? Oh yeah, I like their music. Okay, well, did you share some shit like, oh my God, I miss Chester once he died? Yeah, then you were affected by it. Everyone has been affected by it. So why aren't people doing things to be able to help people? Because once that person dies and that other person gets affected, that person then suicides on their mind. And then they go through the, well, what could I have done? Like, if I would have done this, 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 or this, X, Y, Z. Like, you could literally sit there for hours and think, if you would have done all these little details every minute of the day differently, how they could have survived. But you're never going to be able to do that. We can't go back in time. We're not going to be able to help them. It's over. You had the chance, and now it's not there anymore. And you lost that person. So if people were educated and knew the information and knew how to respond to people in crisis, it would be a lot better off.
See the signs.
Because I went through the same thing. My ex-girlfriend, I want to say it was 3 or 4 years ago now, they call it a drug overdose, but she killed herself. And it was like, I don't live in that state anymore. Obviously, I moved. I'm here. And for like the first week, I was like talking to my mom on the phone. I was like, I could have done something. Like, I was with her. Like there was something I could have done. And my mom's like, dude, it's over. Like, there's nothing you can do. And it's like, if people could save that person beforehand, like, and people don't think about that. Because they don't think, oh, so-and-so's going to kill themselves. They just have no idea. You know what I mean? So they don't think of that possibility. So if people were just educated and thought of the possibility of that happening to someone, then, you know, it would be on their minds. I just want it to be on people's minds, that's all. I want people to be educated.
Yeah. Have to be more equipped in how to deal with it or identify when it's going on, when it's not obvious.
So,
yeah. Do you believe that in some cases it's not obvious? Like, it really does just hit somebody out of nowhere.
So usually what happens that we learn is there will be warning signs very early, like months, years before it happens. But leading up to the point, they will be extremely quiet, just kind of like different, just like kind of like numb to anything that happens. They will just kind of be like going through the motions as normal, going to work, coming home, the normal thing. And that's when you have to be worried. Once that little like change happens, that's when you got to start being concerned for them. And they teach us to be straight.
Like circling the bowl, essentially.
Yep, they teach us to be straight with them in class because most people say, like, oh, you shouldn't say suicide. They actually teach us in class, like, you look at someone in the eye and say, are you considering suicide? Because once you put the word out there, it kind of opens up that conversation for them to be comfortable already because someone already said it. They don't have to say it. It's already in that realm. So that's usually how we approach things.
Is it, like, sometimes better to say, are you thinking about hurting yourself?
Nope. They tell us not to say that.
Be as blatant as you want. Yeah.
It's funny because they say in the training exactly, do not say, are you considering hurting yourself? Because that's not exactly what they might be thinking.
Yeah.
You want to be exactly straight.
If anything, it's sometimes the opposite. They're like, actually, no, I don't want to hurt anymore.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So.
Yeah, they tell you to be straight with
people. I want to release.
Yeah. And that's why I always tell people, I'm just straight with people. That's a good way to be. If you can't deal with reality, then you're not going to be able to function in society.
You can't sugarcoat it.
Nope.
What do you think we need to do with that? Because we were talking about that before we turned the mics on, but like, there's a lot of people that aren't equipped to deal with
stress. Because, I don't like to just throw a blame around, because then I sound like a politician, but the school systems need to be adjusted. Because these people can't deal with life, period. A lot of people, like, not to call people out, but anytime someone tells me they're an Instagram influencer, I'm like, oh, okay, because it's like one of those things where it's like you have no idea how to deal with life outside of your social media. And I don't think people are equipped to be able to deal with stress in life because I don't think we are equipping them to do so. Similar to how other countries, for example, have forced military, women in Israel, 2 years military service, right?
Switzerland.
Which is great. I think it's fantastic. I think everyone should do it. I think you should have to do first responder or EMT, police, military. I think you should have to do one for 2 years, everybody. Because I think that's going to equip you to be able to deal with people and give you that, to be able to deal with people when they're at their worst. Yeah. And I think that
you should be like in a higher tax bracket or something until you complete the course if you don't do it by the by the age of 18.
And we should, that'd be pretty cool. You should go through forced mental health training in school. It should have to be a requirement to pass. Like we have, you go to college. Like this is why I never go to college, right? Because I'm like, I want to go and do philosophy. And they're like, okay, well, you need math one, English one. And I'm like, no, that's not what my degree is in. Like, I don't care. And like, I think that instead of like those, Like, in order to become certain jobs, you should have to go through mental health one, mental health two. Like, just so you can learn how to deal with that sort of thing. Because no one knows how to deal with it. Because no one cares to know how to deal with it. We know how to fix a broken bone, but no one knows how to fix your brain. And that's kind of a problem. No one knows how to cope with
most people are taught first aid. Most people know how to do first aid.
Yeah, I
you know, like, first respond for mental health issues.
At work, just a couple months ago, we had like, or a month ago, we had like a employee wellness day, right? And they're like, oh, we're bringing in a masseuse. They're going to be giving massages. Ooh. You're going to learn, you know, you could learn CPR. You could do this. It's just like appreciation for you being an employee there. And I like, and I'm just like, okay, so can I come in and do like a mental health class? Because I think that's kind of what people should be going through, not getting a massage. Like, you should know how to help your coworkers when they're in crisis. The day after I helped my friend, I went into work, and one of my coworkers was bawling in the break room, just crying her eyes out. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, so that's the second time I had to deal with it, right there at work. And it's like, there's like 40 people here, and one of you guys crying in the back, and everyone's just going about their day like it's cool. Like, I understand we're here to make money, but what if someone dies because you weren't paying attention? Then what?
I feel like in work situations, they train the workers to actually kind of ignore it.
Yeah.
It's just like, mind your own business. Mm-hmm. You don't know what they're going through. Do not, you know, pressure people to speak. Don't make people feel like, I don't even know. I'm baffled by the concept where like somebody's crying at work and that's just like, but we're supposed to leave them alone because essentially that'll help them.
Yeah.
It's just like, if I don't know, if I was going to cry at work and I wanted to be left alone, I would leave work.
Right. And people just assume shit. Like, I'm always laughing, like, when I'm walking down the street and someone's, like, crying in a corner and everyone just kind of, just watch everyone just kind of, like, walk by, like, dude, there's literally a human being suffering and you're just walking by. You know what I mean?
Sucks to suck.
Yeah. Like, sucks, or someone thinks, oh, her boyfriend must have broken up with her, or he must have got fired from his job, or whatever. Just, like, ask them. And they tell us in training, don't say, like, if you think someone's in crisis, don't, like, say you're normal. Don't walk in. Like, I won't walk into work and say, hey, how are you? Because that's just kind of like, oh, I'm good. How are you? You know, people have an automated response to that. You should say, like, if you know something about them, like, we had a girl that got recently broken up with, and I said, I went up to run my way into work, and I was like, how are you coping with the loss of your relationship? Just be straight. Like, so they will actually tell you exactly how they're feeling about that situation. If you ask me, like, how are you doing? I'm going to say, I'm fine every time.
You have to ask them, like,
you have to be
like, something that they have to explain.
Yes, they have to. Yeah. You have to make them answer you, basically.
It should be a little personal.
That they'll answer. Yeah.
Well, what do you think about that? I mean, in some work environments, some people are very to themselves, and you know, like, nobody will know anything about a particular person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then like you see them going through some rough shit. What do you do? You know,
I'm very detail oriented. For example, say that's in an office job, they have pictures of their kids, or they have, there's things you can grasp, the car they drive, that you'll gather information about them to be able to ask them a question. But even just ask something general, don't say, hi, how are you? You know, ask specifically, how's your week been? How's your family? You know, something that pertains to everybody. You know what I mean? You just have to be specific. You have to ask them a question that they have to answer with specifics.
You have to put some effort into how you're communicating with people. Yeah. Just like, you know, the surface level, hi, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah.
You have to put up the effort to help people.
I mean, like at work, I've helped a few people that have been like crying before. Like one time my manager was crying, you know, because of some stuff that was going on in her home life. Everybody just assumed that since she was a new manager, that she is just not handling the store well.
Right.
But I had only spoken to her one time and she had complained about, you know, like how hard it was moving here from Florida. And the reason was because she wanted to be close to her father.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, how is everything with you and your father?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just turned into this whole thing. But the funny thing is that after that, like a few weeks later, she ended up moving back to Florida.
Yeah.
I was just like, did I just like get her to quit? I'm sorry. I'm like, we didn't have a manager for a while. I was like, shit, we don't have a manager anymore.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, she's like, when she told us that she was moving back home, she was like, it's all for the best. The stuff that's been going on with my father's, like, you know, essentially, like, out of my hands. It was, like, a whole thing that had to do with, like, his wife and his gradual pushing people away, you know, and, like, her trying to, like, get to be close to her father again, and it's just, like, not working, you know. So essentially, like, she's just like, I have to move back to Florida where I can be around people, since I'm essentially alone with the only person I thought I cared about.
I actually had a question for you.
Yeah.
With tomorrow being October 1, I wanted to ask if you've had to personally, if you've had any experience with people who lost anybody in the shooting and have dealt with suicidal thoughts as a result of that.
I actually haven't with that event, the October 1st event. I haven't dealt with anyone specific to that event. I will tell you that last year I actually went down to the Strip, the
Healing Garden.
Yeah, the where the sign is.
Oh, okay.
And because that's where everyone had like the crosses and everything.
Yeah, the guy who made all the crosses.
Yeah, so I went down there, and this was before I was very heavily into the, like, I had my nonprofit, but this was before I was really like where I am now. And I just kind of like observed everyone, just kind of like how the feeling was down there. And I even posted on Facebook, I was like, it is like surreal. Just being there is weird. You know what I mean? Like, anytime you're in a place, I tell people where like going to Gettysburg, where a lot of death happened, there's like just in the air. You know what I mean? You just feel something in the air. It's weird. It's very eerie. So I just went down there, and actually, thank you for reminding me, tomorrow is October 1st. Maybe I'll go down there again and just see if anyone needs help with mental health while I'm down there. But I haven't dealt with anyone specific to that event, surprisingly. We have it in the coalition either, I don't think. That might be a good idea. Maybe I'll grab some volunteers.
No, yeah, that's a really good idea.
Yeah, I didn't think about that until I forgot that was tomorrow. Like, you know, because I haven't heard anything about it.
But
I wanted to ask you, have you seen 13 Reasons Why?
I've only seen a little bit of it, okay. And part of me did not really like the way that they were. I felt like they were sensationalizing suicide and making it look like something that people could do.
And so the coalition agrees with you. So Nevada Coalition for Suicide Prevention, we have a paper that says 13 Reasons Why Talking Points. And it basically tells you how to talk to someone who might have seen it, a kid or something like that. And they talk about how it's not, it glorifies suicide and stuff like that. So the coalition's kind of, I want to say, against 13 Reasons Why, but I'm not. So for me, and this is why I'm very controversial, is because I like putting the reality in front of people. And that's the only way someone's going to heal. So for me, I watched that show, being an attempt survivor. Watching the scene where she actually did it was one of the hardest things I ever had to do.
It
was so difficult. Like, it was rough. Because it shows everything.
Do you dislike the fact that Netflix removed that
footage? I do. Because I think that people need to see that. Like, if I go down to Fremont Street, and, for example, like, the anonymous people that go down there with their, like, you're killing animals, billboards, and shit like that.
Yeah.
And they're putting it in people's faces. And if I went down there and kind of just, like, walk up to people and said, hey, what do you think about suicide? They're either going to blow me off, or they're going to be like, I don't have any thoughts about it. I don't want to be talked to. I'm here for a good time. Whatever. But then I show them the scene of a young girl killing themselves, like, or, for example, I just paint them a picture of someone in their family killing themselves, they're going to have a way different response. Because that's the reality. This is something that actually happens. And people don't see that every day. And that's why I think what 13 Reasons Why did with that was very good. And I very much disagree with that.
It's just with the tapes. Pulling it out. The fact that she had those tapes and she was essentially weaponizing her suicide. That's how it felt
to me. We have
to
remember.
That's like what.
Yeah.
I viscerally reacted and just stopped. Yeah. Watching the show.
But we have to remember that this is fictional entertainment. Yeah. And that's what we have to tell our kids. This is entertainment based on a subject of reality.
Yeah.
And that's where parents have to just let their kids know, you know, because the coalition kind of blames 13 Reasons Why for letting kids see it. I'm like, parents are responsible for what the kids watch.
Yeah.
This has a rating
on it. And for not creating a conversation if they did watch it.
Like, it's up to that person or the people in that parental position, guidance position, to have that conversation with the child. Yeah. So I think what 13 Reasons Why did was very good. It wasn't just about suicide. If you watch season 2 or season 3, the scene where they sodomize that kid, the bullies, is also one of the hardest things I've ever had to watch. So I think that they put a lot of like drug addiction and bullying and LGBTQ problems and things like that in that show. And they're actually talking about real world problems, but everyone's kind of like, oh, you can't watch that because it's glorifying these problems. It's not. It's putting them in people's faces, and they don't like to see that. And that's the problem with people. They don't want to talk about that. That's why it's taboo. They don't want to talk about depression because they say, oh, you're going to depress me talking about it. This is what actually happens.
You have to feel things sometimes, yeah.
So
it can't be like that upbeat, like, YouTube announcement music all the time, dude. Where it's like boo doo 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 all the time. Like, I can't live in that lifestyle.
Dude, I have a coworker that comes in and he's always upbeat and happy, and I say stop. It's bothering me because I'm like, you're like, that's not helping because I know you're faking it. Like, I'm like, what's wrong? He's like, nothing, man. I'm having a great day. I'm good. I'm like, dude, stop. Like, it really gets under my skin when people are too positive all the time.
I feel like I'm a nice balance because, like, I'll be, like, nice and bubbly but make, like, pessimistic observations about people.
Yeah.
And, like, just say, like, problems. Terrible things and stuff. And I'm feeling so good. I want to, like, put my feet down and, like, do a foot bath,
like,
you know?
Everyone has problems. It's time we, like, acknowledge them. Put them out there because it's reality.
I mean, like, I definitely liked the cinematography, and I feel like the actors' performances were like really authentic, mm-hmm. as to like the emotion, especially the main girl.
Yeah,
but Hannah. It just came down to what she decided she wanted to do with that, and just like how impressionable children are, and how like they could be like, yeah, because a lot of that is driven by rage, and rage is in irrational, you know, mm-hmm. and her decision to use her death as a way to make people regret what they did to her, mm-hmm. can make an irrational person who might already have this type of rage, like, you know, create an idea or like spark inspiration to something on their own. I know that we do have a responsibility as to what we watch and how we feel about it. I know that I wouldn't, you know, be driven to that. Like, I know it's just like, if I watched it, I wouldn't have been like, that's a great idea, tapes, you know, and like just like start doing that. But like seeing it made me just think of like social implications, mm-hmm. and just like, I immediately did just like turn it off. I could give it another try, you know, if you're going to give such a good, you know, referral to it.
Suicide is only the topic of the first season, I think. Which kind of upsets me because I'm like, they just kind of like brush it under the rug second, third season. I'm like, wow.
I guess who the fuck is Hannah? Anymore.
I mean, like, her name comes up, but she's not really in it. I'm just kind of like, in the third season, she's not in it at all. Not cast. Not in it.
Yeah.
Not a single time.
No flashbacks.
Nothing. It just, they just move on. So it's just kind of weird. But they
It's now
explore,
about the main boy.
No, it's actually, the third season is about Bryce, the guy who was raping all of the, like, the women in the cheerleading squad.
He's like the blonde football guy, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. So they explore that. So like I said, they're exploring a lot of different issues that are currently happening in high schools. So I like that they're kind of exploring
and
all those
colleges.
Issues.
Yeah. Yes. And in middle schools. These kids are fast.
So like I approve of exactly what the directors and the producers of 13 Reasons Why I did, because they have the same mindset as me, is we're going to put it in people's faces. And if they don't like it, that's tough, because this is what happens.
Maybe they could have just put like a trigger warning right before.
They
like
do.
So they put a trigger warning, they
do.
Still took it away?
Yeah, they talk about like before it starts, before every season starts, and after every episode, it says one of the cast members kind of has a face to the camera thing where they say, if you're going through XYZ or this show expresses this, and you should have a conversation with your family or whatever about what you saw here. And they actually give you links to help you.
Right. Well, I mean, like, instead of them removing the entire scene so no one gets to see it, maybe right before that scene happens, like, Netflix has a thing that pops up and says, this next scene is incredibly graphic.
Yeah.
You know, are you sure you want to continue, or do you want to skip past it, or maybe like have, you know, a child lock on it if it's a parent's account?
It is a show.
Like, they could have done something like that instead of essentially censoring the imagery.
It is art, like, and I've always been like, you shouldn't censor something if we've already created it and put it out there. It belongs to the public.
And it also has a rating system on it already.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I think it's just because since it's high school, it's already targeting a young audience. Yeah. But so was Degrassi.
Mm-hmm.
And people killed themselves and did things along the like of what Hannah did as well, where it was intentional for purposes beyond just, you know, what was going on in her personal life. Like, and they did that on that show, and I don't think that they censored it. And I do think it's just a part of the times that we're in, where we're not teaching people how to cope. We're not teaching people how to have a correct dialogue, you know, with each other about things that are unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm glad that they do that, though, where they have someone, like, talk about mm-hmm. it before at the end.
And I think before that exact episode, in the beginning of the episode, it says that it's graphic and disturbing, stuff like that, like this specific episode. I think they do. It's been a while since I've seen that season, but...
Hmm. One quick thing. This is a big old leap away from mental health. I've just been dying. Where did the idea for your marvelous face tattoo come from?
It's funny because, like, I've had this tattoo for, see, I'm 28. I've had it for 9 years.
9 years.
Yes. I got it when I was 19. It was my third tattoo. Yeah. And originally, this is going to sound really bad and because I'm very self-deprecating, but I was like, dude, I'm super ugly. Like, I should do something at least with my face just to be interesting, right? And I still believe that. I still tell people, like, I got it so that I at least looked interesting because I'm not happy with the way I look, right? So I tell people that all the time. Like, I like having that. It makes me interesting. It makes people talk about something. You know, it kind of makes me stand out. Originally, I wanted something on my face because no one does it. I'm big into, you know, video games, fantasy worlds, books, stuff like that. And I was like, dude, there's, like, tribes that it's normal. It's as a sign of their culture, a sign of their job to put ink on their face in a certain way. It's a status symbol in some cases, a symbol of rank and stuff like that. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool if, like, we evolved to a level where, like, tattoos would be so normalized that it might be a symbol for something like that. And so I was like, I'm gonna put something on my face to shock people and to make them see that, like, it could be a completely normal person. Rather than, at the time I got this, it was still one of those things where, like, only people who have been to jail or stuff like that had a tattoo on their face and hands.
Yeah, it wasn't like Lil Xan and all this stuff going on now.
Now it's kind of like stupid. I kind of wish I didn't have it because there's a fucking retard.
Oh man, but you can't let the lowest denominator ruin things, you know? Because that could be the same with, like, piercings.
Yeah.
You know, when before everybody really started doing piercings, like, you know, like, everybody was just like, oh, it's for burnouts and dumb.
But still, when I go to, like, South Carolina, like the Bible Belt, dude, I love walking into a mall and it's like the Wild West scene where the dude walks into the saloon and everyone stops talking. You know what I mean?
People grab their kids and, like, move them.
It's still like that sometimes.
Jeez.
People who are around me are always like, my best friend, I still remember the day I was visiting her and we go into a mall, we're walking around, we were with each other all day, kind of just going around places, and she's like, man, it's really weird that everyone's looking at me more than usual today. I'm like, it's me.
Not looking at you.
She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I have a tattoo on my face. You've known me for 7 years. You don't see it anymore. But people do. And she's like, oh my God, you're right. I'm like, I know. That's exactly why. I'm so used to it now. Like, I wear here my sunglasses. You can't see my eyes to it. I'm always staring at people. Like, they're looking at me. I can just tell. I've been denied jobs. I can tell, but... You know, I wouldn't change anything about it.
And I feel like that culture is also shifting as well.
Yeah.
You know, the discrimination against tattoos, it's going down. So let's
It's weird because I hate needles. I pass out almost every tattoo. Oh, yeah. Dude, I hate it. I wouldn't even get blood drawn. Yeah. I'm so deadly afraid. Yeah, dude, fuck that.
They fucking dug. They dug so much in me.
Yeah, what's
up
with
those bruises?
Dude, I have no interest.
Yeah.
When they were putting the stencil on my back, I passed out.
It's called being poor.
It's just like, dude, I can't. No, so it's weird that I even have a face tattoo. It was one of the easiest ones to get, so.
Did it hurt? Like, did it hurt more than other ones?
Do you have a tattoo?
No.
Tattoos hurt.
No. Newsflash. But, like, there's spots.
My
like,
hands
you know,
were
like your arms
10 times worse.
Than your face? Yeah.
Yeah, fuck. I would never do that. I would never do that. Hell no. Mine wasn't bad either. That was easy. My hands, I would never get, I don't know if I want to get more hand tattoos. That one's not even finished because it's fucking miserable.
Right.
So it just depends. My face wasn't bad. About 45 minutes and I had to tell them to hurry up because it was vibrating my brain so much that it started giving me a really bad headache.
So, have you ever done microneedling or have you ever heard of microneedling?
No idea.
Okay. It's this type of dermatology.
It's like
thing.
What you call it?
It's microdermabrasions. Yeah, like essentially they just rub this wand that has needles stabbing you.
I don't even want to talk about needles.
I'm just saying, like, I haven't had a tattoo. I haven't had a tattoo, but my sister, did 45 minutes of like essentially ripping off the first layer skin. Bro. So she told me I could essentially have a tattoo anywhere. Dude, she was like, if you can put up with this,
bro,
then you can get a tattoo.
I had my Monroe done at one point, and it got really infected, like with a needle or with a piercing. It got really infected, and like ever since then, like needles, like I can't do it.
No.
So
over here, I did all my own fucking piercings.
No, I couldn't do it. If someone like teases me and is like, "Oh, I'm gonna poke you with this needle," I'll kill him. I'm that bad. I'll be like, "Dude, I will knock your teeth out. Don't come near me with that." Like it bothers me that much. Yeah, I won't. When I go to the tattoo place, I won't look at the needle. They're like, "You want to inspect?" I'm like, "Nope." Just start. Because once the needle goes in, I'm like, got ink on me. It's got to be done. Otherwise, I'm going to have a fucking line in my skin, like, because I'm a bitch. You know what I mean? So I just tell them to hurry up. But, yeah, my face, again, just because I want to. And I think it improves the way I look.
Right on.
Otherwise, I'm not happy. I hate looking in the mirror. It's horrible. I don't like pictures of me. Like my Facebook picture, I'm in my racing helmet. That's how much I do not like the way I look, so...
Well,
at least it's interesting.
Yeah.
I know people always hear that story like, why do you have to be so depressing? I'm like,
yeah, it's true. No, it's not depressing.
It's true.
I kind of think that you're just wrong. I'm just like, you don't look that bad. Like, yeah, I'm like, I'm like, you could not have the tattoo. You'd just be a normal human being.
It's whatever, though.
But hey, yeah, like, I mean, yeah, it does. Yeah. It does build character. It does. Yeah. And it creates more conversations with people. And that's what you want to do.
Why I like that I do this nonprofit thing. Because like when we're in the meeting room for all nonprofit people and I'm sitting here in this like chilling, I roll in and there's like, who the fuck is this? Like everyone's in their suits. They have like their papers and they're writing shit down, just sitting there chilling. And then they get to me and I'm like, yeah, I try to kill myself, by the way. And this is what I do. And everyone's just like shattered, like just baffled. I'm just like, this is what we look like.
We're trying to do work.
This is what people who kill themselves look like everybody else, you know? So I'm glad that I'm doing this. I'm on the convention. I'm on the lived experience panel. So they'll be asking me questions and stuff like that. So should be good.
What day is that again?
October 17th and 18th for the suicide prevention conference.
Right on.
It'll be cool to attend because they're going to be doing classes live. Both days.
Can you plug where it's going to be one more time?
It's going to be at Suncoast Hotel.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, it's the Nevada Suicide Prevention Conference. I believe, I forget the company that's actually hosting it. It's like CAST. I forget what they stand for.
Okay.
But should be good. I've never done it. I've never spoken in front of people about my experience. But when I started, I told people, like, if I could be a public speaker the rest of my life, that's what I would do. So we'll see how it goes.
Right on. Well, I think that this has been a marvelous like way to like draw this to a close. I've been so happy that having this conversation. It's been a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love talking about this. Like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
I was like, I wish a rich person would just like give me like a few grand a month to live and I would literally just walk around and just talk to people about this for the rest of my life. Easy.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Katie?
Last comments that you'd want to say to anybody who's listening?
Like I tell everyone at the end of my videos, like literally just like help people. Just look out for your friends. If it looks like someone is going through something, like help them. Like people just want someone to reach out. When I showed up to my friend's house, he said, "I'm just glad you're here." He was like, "If you wouldn't have came, I would be dead." Just literally just talk to someone and you're good.
For others when they need you.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I think so as well. And then just reach out more.
Yeah.
I just think so. Like just
in general.
Even to strangers, like I try to say hi to people. I try to give people smiles and stuff. Sometimes it's not received with anything. You know, sometimes people just think about that because I've had a rough day, you know, and then like somebody was really nice to me. I don't know why, but I can't get them out of my mind. I can't get the fact that somebody, you know, like commented on my shirt or like they told me that they like my dog, you know, like just... just kindness.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thank you, Christian. Your energy is great. Your input's great. And I think that this has been the start of just more things to come for you. I want you to have that car, man. I'm going to sit in it. And I'll be like, hey, can I have like a megaphone and like just call people to our car and just be like, how are you feeling? I would totally do it. I would love to.
Yeah. That's what I'm about, awareness. Put it in people's faces.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you for having a conversation with us.
Of course.
Yeah. And this was Millennials Emotions with Conversations with the Community. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
See you next time.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening to our second episode of Conversations with the Community. We hope you enjoyed our discussion with Christian from Gears for Life and learned something valuable from the exchange. To learn more from Gears for Life, check out the links in the description below. If you like our content and discussions, don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe to our channel to get notifications from us. And please follow us on our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as our actual website, mimmag.com. If you support what we're doing and want to help our growth as an organization, please check out our Patreon community and join us on our journey. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, I'm Catherine from Millennials in Motion magazine, and this is Conversations with the Community.